those bits. Panel is very helpfully pre-read, and then we get into conditions. Yeah. That should base a little bit. Is that does yeah. that suit everyone?
That sounds good. Does that suit you, panel? Yep. Okay.
Thank you. All right. Thanks for that. And thank you also to Commissioner Sweetman for reminding the chair that we need to stop for lunch occasionally. So we're grateful. Not that there's anywhere to get lunch here, but that's fine. Right. So landscape, don't make me depressed again. Landscape and visual effects. You read the reply submissions there. The key outstanding issue is, of course, around whether a design framework concept is appropriate or not. KBRL maintains its opposition, I suppose, to the additional set of conditions around the design framework. Through the hearing and post, there's been another joint witness, a really helpful discussion from all the relevant planning, social impact and landscape experts for both the City Council and KBRL. They had good discussion on that. You would have seen the JWS, but ultimately in relation to the design framework approach, KBRL and its experts maintain the approach in the proposed conditions as appropriate. That is a good and clear landscape and design plan. And we have revised that and tightened it up. In my submission, it's a much improved condition to what was originally tabled with you at the opening of our case. And we have certainly heard some of the concerns from City Council experts as well as the panel about that. What's most important to both Ms. Austin and Ms. Rimmer in particular is that those landscape and design provisions and plan are as clear as they can be, but also that we're very authentically being quite straight up with the community as well. The KBRL experts, and in my submission appropriately, are uncomfortable with any suggestion that, for example, with design and landscape, it's an open book. It's sort of a blank sheet of paper, and let's all together design what this thing might look like. We need to, in my submission, be really authentic about that design and framework plan, that quite a lot of thinking has been done, as the panel knows, about where key features of the operation of the hub will be located. There's already a high level of sort of understanding about that. And then, of course, Ms. Rimmer's work is quite detailed around what she thinks needs to be done there. So some of those key building blocks have already really been carefully considered and assessed. Having said that, and when we get into the conditions, you'll see, or I will point you through what KBRL has proposed to do there. There still must be sufficient and transparent ability for community in Manawatu to really engage on the aspects of that plan that they can and should influence. But for KBRL's experts, and in my submission, it would be really disingenuous to suggest to the community that, for example, operational matters or the need for a noise wall or landscape fund is something that might be designed, might be thought of as in terms of an outcome or objective, almost as a blank sheet of paper. The reality is that some key aspects of the landscape and design plan are based on matters that the community will not meaningfully be able to influence, like operational requirements, for example. Now, that is not to say, and I think it's really important to clarify, that's not a door shutting on engagement. That's actually, in my submission, a really transparent and honest way of being clear about where value and influence can be made there in relation to those matters.
Okay, well, let's have a look at the condition in due course, and that will start to give some bones to what you're saying.
Thank you. And sir, that also, too, and we'll talk about this in a minute as well, and as we get into the proposed Manawatu engagement condition as well, there's some there's some, you know, there's a suite of other tools and conditions that also feed into those discussions. Just in relation to ecology, have set out reply subs from page 35 there to 36. Theme there, again, as we talked about this morning, around a concern in relation to potential incomplete assessment or information gaps. In my submission, it's not an information gap issue. It's rather a difference of expert opinion issue in relation to ecology. I've set out there from page 35 what the evidence you have from Mr. Garrett Walker and also Ms. Quinn's opinion around that assessment that Mr. Garrett Walker has done. Mr. Garrett Walker, in my submission, has done a good and robust assessment, and on the base of that, considers it unlikely, for example, that there will be wetlands on the site, but in the event any are present, he recognizes and considers those effects will be able to be mitigated or offset. And the point there as well, that fundamentally Ms. Quinn for the City Council agrees the site is degraded and that it is not an inappropriate site for the freight hub development from an ecological perspective. In relation to air quality, again, outstanding difference of views in relation to conditions on that. Now, the air quality experts are in agreement in my submission to a significant degree, and that's summarized on page 37. The disagreement really lies to what we were speaking about earlier in relation to where sort of management of dust should sit. I noted that we have proposed an operational dust management plan, but there's an outstanding issue around construction dust, and we've done a bit of homework over the lunch break for Commissioner Sweetman, which I'll summarize in a minute. I think it's important to note that in relation to the conditions, the construction dust management conditions proposed in Ms. Cobbleton's set, Ms. Cobbleton has said she does not consider that any overlap in this area would be burdensome to Kiwi Rail. In my submission, that observation, and I'm not sure the basis on which Ms. Cobblestone can make it, but that observation is beside the point that this double up shouldn't be burdensome. But in relation to the dust homework question from Commissioner Sweetman, so the one plan doesn't refer to, quote, dust, but requires in those provisions, you would have been referring to Commissioner's Waitman Rule 13.2, Matters of Control, requires an erosion and sediment control plan. That is defined in the one plan as being must be prepared in accordance with the Wellington guidelines. The Wellington guidelines talk about the need to prevent dust generation from site access points. So reference dust in that way, but also the team who are all tuned in online and listening to that bit of homework over the break sent through to Ms. Rapley and I an example of a recently granted Horizons regional consent, which, again, I suppose, does this go to our trust point, says there shall be no discharge of airborne dust that is objectionable to the extent it causes adverse effect at or beyond the boundary of the subject property, and also includes a condition which says the consent holder shall provide the regional council with a finalized erosion and sediment control plan. That plan shall require as a minimum, pardon me, that plan required shall, as a minimum, be based upon and incorporate specific principles and practices in the guidelines for Wellington. Now, appreciate that's a regional consent I'm looking at here and you don't have before you, and is it some, you know, sort of additional extraneous material. But I suppose the point is that approach that Horizons takes and has very recently, again, taken with KiwiRail in relation to a regional earthworks matter, is one of the reasons that gives the KiwiRail team confidence that for the regional council, they consider that dust management is a matter for them to have regard to, and in fact have imposed the conditions of the kind, for example, that Ms. Cobblestone is looking at, e.g. there shall be no discharge of dust, objectionable dust, beyond the boundary. So suppose all that homework is to say that the to the chair's point before, clearly in the with regional or pardon me, district consenting matters, where district consents are required, you would expect the TA, for example, to consider dust effects. But equally then at the regional earthworks consenting phase, quite clearly the Horizons, even in its matters of control, require an ESCP, and that, as clearly as practice, includes dust management.
Can you just tell me what the matters of control are for Rule 13.2?
Yes, sir. One second. Point 2, control is reserved over the locations, nature, scale, timing, and duration of the activity. Additional content of and standard to which the erosion, sediment, and sediment control plan must be prepared, the implementation of the plan, and the timing of when it must be prepared and submitted. The effects of the activity and associated sediment runoff on soil conservation, surface water quality, and aquatic ecology, and the methods to be undertaken to avoid, remedy, and mitigate, the provision of greater setback distances from water bodies, and the specified in blah, 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 duration of consent, review, compliance, monitoring, and the matters in policy 14.9, which I can look at in a minute. And then the erosion and sediment control plan as defined means a plan prepared in accordance with the erosion and sediment control guidelines for the Wellington region dated September 2002. The plan shall include but not be limited to, and then it's got a list of matters.
Yeah, so that resonates with my understanding of the rule stream and its scope, which is focused on regional functions. And particular focus to management of earthworks for the purpose of soil conservation and water quality. What the council is proposing is a more comprehensive suite of dust management conditions for amenity and protection of neighbours as opposed to in-stream values. So I don't, and my knowledge of the GWRC guidelines is that they are similarly focused. I don't think those rules and that protocol establish that the type of conditions the council is proposing are redundant in any way.
Mm-hmm. When we look at the, and perhaps we'll park it to look at Ms. Cobblestone's conditions as against our table, but at the moment, as if, for example, you know, they're very prescriptive set of conditions, but even with the council's proposed construction dust management plan, the purpose there is to detail measures to avoid, remedy, or mitigate adverse effects of dust from construction activities. Mm. So even in that approach, that in my submission is an incredibly broad purpose and not necessarily clearly limited to example manage amenity effects on residents.
Right. So a halfway house might be that the condition is more focused on things other than in-stream water quality values and sediment transport.
Yes, or is very clear, around that what is actually the mischief we're trying to manage here. I note as well the whole suite of proposed dust conditions ends with sort of an advice note that says if this is in your regional consent, we'll take it as, tech you've complied here, which also is problematic for me. But we can look at this. I don't think there's any, again, intent or suggestion from Kiwi Rail that it's looking to get away with something here.
No, and we're not putting it on, I'm not putting it on that basis. I'm simply saying that the basis it has been put to us is you don't want duplication or inefficiency. But if we find there is no redundancy or inefficiency, then your problem is removed.
Yes, sir.
Okay.
Any questions? I've galloped through that, but any questions before I proceed in relation to Section 8, Cultural Values? Thank you. Okay. So cultural matters. Again, just at this juncture, and this is a really critically important part of my reply to you and update to you. Again, at this point, I do also really want to acknowledge and thank the folks, and they know who they are, who we've been working really closely with in relation to these matters, in particular the Manawa engagement framework conditions over the last many, many weeks, but particularly over the last couple months, where we've really been focusing on the words and what they mean. I would like to also particularly acknowledge Ms. Polson, who is remaining very closely and deeply engaged and involved in these matters, but also Logan Kahui, who I think is in the room in Palme with you, sir, who is an iwi engagement advisor at Kiwi Rail. And Mr. Right. Kahui has been working very closely and very diligently and with a great amount of respect in my submission and good faith around these issues. So I did just want to acknowledge those folks from the Kiwi Rail team in particular.
You're welcome, Logan.
I also, too, at this point, just want to apologize for my appalling pronunciation of some of Te Reo Māori words. It's a work in progress for me, but I do think it is important. I'm often quite embarrassed at my pronunciation. My Canadian vowel, many decades of Canadian vowel training, I do find it very challenging, but it is a work-on area for me, and I just did want to apologize. I know sometimes my pronunciation is not as good as it should be.
Well, I'm sure if you try, that'll be appreciated.
Well, that's the thing I can do. I also want to acknowledge, too, we finalized these reply submissions and filed them at 2 a.m. a couple nights ago. We have still, and as you would expect, and as Kiwi Rail embraces and appreciates, continue to have korero with key folks up to and including as late as last night on this and through to the morning. This is, and appropriately should not be, a discussion that starts and stops when Kiwi Rail hands up an application or hands up a set of proposed conditions, and we acknowledge that and understand that. It's also important to lean into the fact, as I have endeavored to do in my reply submissions, that KiwiRail has not obtained CVAs at this point in time. It has been open about that and has come to you without CIAs or CVAs. Instead, the approach from KiwiRail has been to invite iwi into the site selection process a couple years ago and to talk through the development of this NOR application process, understanding, seeking to understand and identify values and how they can be represented as KiwiRail has worked through this project and as it has developed over time. So that approach is about developing relationships and trying to unlock opportunities for iwi, exploring new ways of doing things. Now, those things can also be possible, I absolutely acknowledge, in relation to CVA development, but not always in my experience. And sometimes, with respect, in my experience, some developers and even some requiring authorities might look to the CVA process as sort of a box tick exercise, and you get that document or report and you hand it in and it's job done. That's not always the case, certainly, but that's not at all the approach that KiwiRail has sought. And as importantly, throughout the development of this proposal, KiwiRail has seen local iwi as partners in this project, not simply stakeholders or even submitters, as that word goes. And KiwiRail has heard and endorses Commissioner Polnare's challenge to actually find real and tangible economic and partnership opportunities for Mana Whenua. So that approach has meant that we haven't gone as fast as the sort of RMA, the strictures of the RMA process or conventional process might demand. And it has meant also in taking that approach that issues have emerged, and also too through this hearing, which is just one step in a long journey here, that a narrative has sort of emerged that there is a deficit potentially of cultural information. But in my submission, there is not a deficit of information before you. And I'll step through the information we do have before us. I also acknowledge, and KiwiRail also must lean into and does, that this approach hasn't been perfect or without challenge. What I will say absolutely is KiwiRail's process has been based on honesty, on transparency, and on listening to what other people are telling them. It is also, in my experience and from observing the team and iwi talking and challenging each other over this process, it has been about people doing their best, trying really hard to listen and to let iwi guide the conversation. So the result of that has been KiwiRail proposing and then refining over the last few months a set of Mana Whenua engagement conditions. They are very broad, they are empowering, and they are intended to be partnership-focused. I also note in my reply that there are also a set of conditions that would make some developers very nervous. But these are not conditions that are intended to go in the requiring authority or developer or subbies bottom drawer. This is not what this is about. We know KiwiRail cannot compel iwi to participate, to talk about anything, frankly, let alone to produce a CVA. It remains KiwiRail's view that it is not appropriate for KiwiRail to assess cultural values of the site, nor insist on CVAs when iwi are not ready to provide them, or don't want to, or have other much more pressing demands on their time, such as managing COVID responses in their communities, of which they have been doing incredibly, or spending a huge amount of time and energy in, for example, in relation to Ngāti Kōwhata, Waitangi Tribunal processes, which are live and critically important and going on now. So QRL has sought to be respectful of that and of the very pressing demands on people's time, resources, and energy. The process QRL has taken has also meant that there's been a need to be very respectful and humble about the interplay between different iwi in relation to this region. That has meant that at some time over the last few years, some have deferred to others, only to later want to play a larger role, and QRL just needs to listen and understand and respect that interplay. The reality is for QRL that it is deeply committed to this region and has been for many, many decades, and is wanting to continue to commit and invest in this area. Kiwi Rail isn't going anywhere in terms of its rail opportunities and profile in this region, and so it is fundamentally critical that it continues to develop and build relationships. So the way that we can design and set that up here in my submission has the real potential to be quite transformative. The conditions we're proposing to you are, in my submission, the best and most appropriate way within the confines of this RMA process we're dealing with to provide meaningful long-term opportunities for iwi in the development of the freight hub. There will be and are other opportunities which sit outside this process in which Kiwi Rail and its leadership team right up to the top will continue to pursue and support. But in my submission, this approach that we have tabled before you in relation to these conditions and in relation to the material information and evidence you have heard should satisfy the panel that cultural effects can be appropriately avoided, remedied, or mitigated. Also, that this project has the real opportunity to unlock some pretty transformative opportunities. Now, just summarizing the evidence, I think, is important because, again, as I noted, the concern and appropriately questions, absolutely appropriately, questions around the level of information and material the panel has before them. So since the MCA process, QRL has engaged with Ngāti Kōwhata, Rangatane, Ngāti Rokawa, Aorangi Marae trustees, and Ngāti Turanga to seek advice in relation to cultural values within the area, the potential effect that the hub may have on those values. And Ms. Paulson's evidence summarized up to the hearing at a high level that engagement. Now, the site selection and MCA processes were also directly informed by information provided by iwi. So in September 2019, Kiwi Rail engaged Ngāti Kōwhata, Rangatane, and Ngāti Rokawa to undertake assessments of each site options that were being investigated as part of the MCA. Iwi were invited to assess the site and provide feedback. Ngāti Kōwhata and Rangatane chose to attend workshops 2 and 3. Rangatane provided Kiwi Rail with a report on each of the long list site options, which used a range of databases containing information on sites of significance to Rangatane. That report identified sites 3 and 4 were preferred, and remember, the site chosen here is site 3, subject to a more detailed assessment on sites of significance in waterways. Ngāti Kōwhata provided comments on the site options, but noted always that it would continue to need to be a process of engagement. Ngāti Kōwhata indicated a preference for site 4 based on a range of factors, But they have not advised that there are sites of such cultural significance within Site 3 that would require avoidance of this site altogether. Now, I must be clear here that I'm not saying that Ngāti Kaufata has agreed to Site 3 or Site 3 has ever been their preferred choice. It was Site 4 was their preferred choice and Site 3 was their second choice. But I must be very clear that Ngāti Kaufata has not agreed to Site 3 in that sense. In determining the short list of options for further analysis, there was a preference from both Ngāti Kaufata and Rangitāte for site locations to the northeast of the city, as opposed to any southern sites in Longburn or sites further north near the Marae. Now, for Rangitāte, that was based on density of known and likely sites of significance to them. And Kirirarua ultimately selected sites 3 and 4 for shortlisting. Marae trustees, Aorangi Marae trustees, were not directly involved through the MCA process, but through various hui over the last couple of years. We understand do not have a strong preference for the location of the site, subject to avoiding locations near the Marae and any associated effects on the Marae. That has been critical and well understood throughout. Now, the Marae, as you know, is about, and we'll talk about that in a minute, about by road about 6K away from the chosen hub site. After site selection, there's continued to be a lot of discussion about a range of matters, including in particular focus on local roading and safety issues, concerns about noise effects on the Marae, and economic opportunities for iwi. Kirirarua has carefully listened to all of that discussion, which has helped to inform Kirirarua's current position. Kirirarua has also benefited from the ability to hear evidence that Ngāti Kaufata has given as part of their current tribunal inquiry proceedings in relation to the Manawatū Ki Poirua tribunal inquiry. And there, I note, some of the key evidence that Judge Fox has heard relates to, and how we heard as well in oral presentation to the panel, the marginalization decline from the prosperous engagement in the early 1850s to hapū in economic and social distress. That evidence recorded that increasingly, Ngāti Rokawa through the early 1850s, Kaufata and others were sidelined or excluded from economic opportunities. In the late 1840s and early 1850s, Ngāti Rokawa and Ngāti Kaufata was abuzz with the possibilities of a township laid out, roads being made, controlling river crossings, building mills, and cultivating land, but things changed. Economic opportunity was taken away. I think that's powerful evidence and has really affected and shaped what are some real possibilities here. So, of course, as part of that information, evidential base for the panel to consider these matters, you heard oral submission from Ngāti Kaufata, Rangitāte, and trustees of Aorangi Marae. While to Runanga o Rokoa attended the reconvened hearing, they elected not to speak to their submission. And Kirirarua understands they are broadly in support of Ngāti Kaufata's position. Representatives on behalf of Ngāti Tūranga noted that while the matters raised in their submission still stand, they are working with Kirirarua to look for common ground and resolution, and they chose not to present at the hearing. So during the hearing and through those oral presentations, some of the matters you heard from iwi were concerns about roading infrastructure and traffic, noise impacts from road and rail on our Rangi Marae. We heard that very clearly. The need to acknowledge the significant impact on the project on the land, 177 hectares of land for this project. The need to see a partnership approach with KiwiRail, an active participation by iwi in this project, but an acknowledgement that there is potential for that. As Commissioner Pomare noted after one presentation, there was reasonable optimism. We did not hear fundamental opposition to the site. Ngāti Kōwhara continues to prefer Site 4, but has said they will continue to work with KiwiRail. We heard frustration from Rangitane about KiwiRail's sometimes sluggish response in the lead up to the hearing. We heard a reminder that iwi should not be sidelined or used to tick a box. I think it was some sterner words than that, and we heard that. Ngāti Kōwhara observed that they considered there is wahi tapu on Site 3. And there were concerns as well about the impacts of the project on stream quality and the opportunities for improvement. Now, since you last saw us in second week of August, when we all had to flee to level 4, KiwiRail has continued working with representatives from Kōwhara, Rangitane, Rokawa, and Ngāti Tuarangi. This has included numerous discussions and hui, lots of online, lots of phone calls, lots of emails, and some in-person meetings in relation to a range of matters, including the proposed conditions. And some of the matters discussed sit outside this process. And in terms of the process before us and the conditions KiwiRail is proposing, we have amended in consultation the Mana Whenua framework, engagement framework set of conditions. Rangitane supports these conditions as now proposed by KiwiRail. Ngāti Kōwhara considers that while the draft conditions are moving in the right direction, they are still not happy with them because they do not consider the conditions appropriately reflect what Ngāti Kōwhara considers as their status as kaitiaki of this particular site or in relation to Ahika. But we have also heard that Ngāti Kōwhara are not in opposition to the Freight Hub project and want to be at the table. Now, one of the key concerns the panel in KiwiRail has heard relates to Aorangi Marae and the Papakāinga. We acknowledge the evidence of Sir Mason Dury on behalf of trustees and the concerns that he and other trustees, as well as those from others from Ngāti Kōwhara, have raised in relation to the effects of the current transport network, road and rail, on the Marae. In a strict sense, the ability for the panel in my submission to consider those adverse effects is limited. The proposed effects of the hub do not extend to adverse effects on the Marae, which arise predominantly from the use of the existing road network, including the state highway, as well as the operative NIMT. And as Mr. Harris from the Manawatu District Council said, from his council's perspective, the concerns of the Marae have been known for a long time and require a multi-user approach and a multi-party solution. Now, while that's a strict...
Was that Mr. Harris or somebody else? I think Mr. Harris didn't turn up.
Oh, my apologies.
Mr. Harris is the CEO, but the mayor and the infrastructure manager.
That's right. That's right. It was the infrastructure manager. My apologies if I got my name wrong. Sorry.
That's right.
But there were some good questions to that council about, what are they doing about the effects on the Marae as well. So KiwiRail is genuinely committed to working with trustees and Ngāti Kōwhara to advance and help consider a multi-party solution to the issues that that place faces and has been challenged by and talking about for a very long time. That is, in my submission, a matter that sits outside this process. Now, the amended conditions, and we'll look to them, we can either do that now or when we do a page flip of the table, are, as I've said, broad and require Kiwi Rail to prepare in partnership an engagement framework with Manawatu and in accordance with Te Tiriti. They also recognize some kaupapa-based approaches, such as Te Whare Takapā, and we heard from Sir Mason about that. They provide a mechanism not only for Kiwi Rail to understand the values of the area, but to honor, recognize, and provide for them in the design and operation of the hub. The proposed conditions provide roles and responsibilities for Mana Whenua at governance and operational levels. This ensures there's an express obligation and ongoing role. Ensures that Mana Whenua are involved in the preparation and implementation of management plans as part of the designation, as well as regional consenting processes. And there's an intent that they will be able to co-develop these management plans with Kiwi Rail, and requires other opportunities for such as around employment, training, and scholarships. I'd note here as well that the conditions as drafted are deliberately broad and reference key and important concepts. If one were to compare them, for example, with the community liaison forum conditions, which we will look at in a minute, while first looking at those conditions, it appears the CLF conditions are much more detailed and, you know, thought through. In fact, that is deliberate in that a CLF has some sort of the approach has been in relation to its setup and administration, and given the very broad church anticipated there, having some clear direction in the conditions on that is appropriate. However, Kiwi Rail's view and my submission, and certainly in relation to the discussions we've been having with Iwi about the condition, the Mana Whenua engagement framework conditions are much more broad and incorporate concepts that are in no way incorporated in relation to the CLF, for example, such as partnership and operational and governance, ability for operational governance roles. So the intent in all of this is to set up a broad and enduring framework to provide for the relationship of Mana Whenua within the site. That is certainly the intent of the framework conditions, and it is also intended that that work is done very early in the process, so that, for example, that engagement framework is set up very early, prepared jointly in partnership within the first 12 months after the MOR is confirmed.
Okay, I think there might be some questions on that section, so I'll start with Commissioner Pomari.
Good enormous, Arthur Young. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Oh, great. I've just noticed throughout your presentation, I haven't missed anything, but there is a little bit of breaking up occurring, so I just wanted to make sure that you can hear me okay. And I do have some questions for you, but firstly, I do want to acknowledge the ongoing discussions that have obviously been occurring between Kiwi Rail and the Mana Whenua throughout this hearings process, and up to as late as last night, I think I heard you say. So I want to acknowledge that and just reassure you that the questions that I'm asking are couched in that context. Now, in relation to your paragraph 8.8, There you say that the conditions proposed are in KiwiRail's view the best and most appropriate way to provide meaningful long-term opportunities for mana whenua in the development of the Great Hub. And I think that's been pretty clear coming through the evidence we've heard from KiwiRail right throughout the hearing. There's no doubt about that. What I am wanting to ask a few more questions about, though, is around the efficacy of those conditions. And obviously, the efficacy of the conditions relation to mana whenua issues is dependent upon the endorsement and engagement of the mana whenua in the processes that are being established through those conditions. Would you agree with that?
Yes, ma'am. Yes.
Okay, and so just as you've acknowledged at paragraph 8.6 that KiwiRail cannot compel iwi to provide cultural value assessments, neither can KiwiRail, and I think you've also acknowledged this, compel the mana whenua to engage or to agree to conditions that are related to this process. Is that your understanding?
Yes, ma'am.
So, in the absence of mana whenua participation in particularly the mana whenua engagement framework, my understanding is that cultural effects cannot be appropriately mitigated. Is that correct?
Not quite, in my view. So, firstly, taking a step back, and can you hear me okay?
Yes, I can.
Taking a step back, it is difficult to capture in my reply subs the the state of the nation, I suppose, and this panel is experienced and sophisticated to probably understand as much what is left unsaid out of deep respect to very, very personal conversations. And so I suppose that's just one of a reality of thinking about these issues that some matters left unsaid. What I can say is in relation, so the starting point is KiwiRail would say that the material you have before you, what we know about the site chosen, KiwiRail's intent even in itself, its intent in relation to stormwater, freshwater management, design, effect management, is that this hub will be designed, developed, and operated to a very high standard and in a way that will ensure that cultural values are appropriately avoided, remedied, and mitigated. Now, that in of itself would be KiwiRail's position that it has that material before it, it understands those issues. And even if nobody wanted to play ball, KiwiRail is confident that it will manage those matters well. But then, in relation to the condition that has been proposed, the starting point is that, for example, Rangatane endorses this condition. So that's the update in relation to Rangatane supports these conditions as now proposed by KiwiRail. That is important. In relation to Ngāti Kaupapa, again, I have summarized in the most appropriate way I can the state of play there. And KiwiRail has confidence that while there is work to be done, they are optimistic there is this condition will be able to be implemented well. Now, certainly from a strict legal sense, ma'am, you're right that the way in which this condition has been drafted, the requirement authority shall prepare an engagement framework in partnership with Manufinwa. Now, that is, and we see conditions like this in similar but different ways where, for example, they require something of a third party. Those conditions may be, agreed with third parties and implemented in a way or introduced in conditions in this way. So I guess that's a long answer to your question, ma'am, of saying the starting point for KiwiRail and my submission is you do have evidence and KiwiRail does have information such that it is confident cultural values can be appropriately avoided, remedied, or mitigated. It has proposed an engagement framework condition that certainly and sort of unashamedly and perhaps, perhaps with another developer, again, that's why I would say this would scare the pants off some folks. There's, I suppose, a level of risk there that if everyone says, actually, we're not interested, in terms of how the engagement framework is prepared, will be something for KiwiRail to carefully reflect on. But having tabled this condition here, the best I can say to that is KiwiRail is confident that this engagement framework will be able to be achieved and will include the matters proposed in that list. And will be a positive outcome of this hub project.
Thank you for your response. That's really helpful, and I am clear now on KiwiRail's position in respect to that. That was helpful. Just going to the second part of that same paragraph, 8.8, where a range of other opportunities sitting outside of the conditions set are referred to. I'm just interested in getting some clarification from you on what you mean by that and how relevant it might or might not be to the NOR process. So setting aside the range of opportunities outside the NOR, do the proposed conditions on their own ensure that cultural effects can be appropriately managed and mitigated? Or is it more accurate to say that a combination of opportunities that sit inside and outside the condition set is required to address cultural effects arising from the NOM?
Thank you, ma'am. My submission would be the former, that this condition and what's proposed here must appropriately stand on its own two feet. It would be unreasonable of me, and I don't think it would be appropriate for me to expand on what those range of other opportunities are, and you'll appreciate the reasons for that. But also it would be totally unreasonable of me to say I'm not going to tell you what they are, but they're necessary to manage the effects on this project. That's not, and I should have clarified that in the reply, that's not the position. That's simply a nod to the fact that over the last couple of years, there's been a lot of discussion with groups, and there are a lot of ways I think KiwiRail recognizes more broadly its role, not simply in relation to this freight hub process. But certainly the answer is in relation to the former question as you posed it, ma'am.
Thank you. That's helpful. Now, just moving to paragraph 8.10C, and you did highlight this issue as you went through your submissions on cultural effects. Waangati Kaupata have indicated a preference for Site 4 based on a range of factors. They have not advised that there are sites of such cultural significance within Site 3 that would require the avoidance of this site altogether. And I note your comment there that you wanted to make it very clear that you weren't saying that Ngāti Kaupata has agreed in any way to Site 3. I'm assuming that Kiwi Rail are aware, and you have referred to this in the last paragraph, I think, of your submissions here, of the wāhi tapu referred to by Ngāti Kaupata during the presentation of their submission to the panel. Mm. Are you aware of that wāhi tapu?
Mm. So I think, firstly, taking a step back, we've been very careful to not suggest, and I think Mr. Emery, when he presented to you, was clear as well, in relation to Site 3. And in fact, yes. Site 3 was not his preferred choice. But I think it is also relevant, including in relation to his comment to you around Wāhi Tapu on Site 3, that Site 3 was Ngāti Kaupata's second preferred choice. The preferred Site 4 on the other side, but if not Site 4, then Site 3. Now, that discussion and involvement in the site assessment process was very useful and important to Kiwi Rail in understanding that Site 3 was not a, what did we say before, not red flags, the showstoppers. There's not a showstopper in relation at all to Site 3. So whilst Mr. Emery observed to you that there is Wāhi Tapu on Site 3. I think that would be an ongoing discussion to understand where and what that is, and also the conditions then have been drafted, including around the Manawhenua Endangerment Framework, accidental discovery protocols, the whole intent to not just, this is not a tick-the-box, subdivision. This is actually folks right co-designing framework. So whilst today I do not have and have not asked for a map of what Mr. Emery was speaking of to you at the hearing, what I do know is that Ngāti Kaupata, whilst they preferred the site on the other side of Railway Road, their second choice was Site 3, and have indicated that they want to be at the table in this discussion. I'm confident that the way in which the conditions have been framed will absolutely ensure that Kiwi Rail will have the information it needs to understand, avoid, remedy, or mitigate those issues.
Thank you. So you're confident then that the Wāhi Tapu that's been referred to without revealing any further information about it at this stage is not of such cultural significance that the freight hub would require avoidance of it altogether.
Yes, ma'am. That's right. And in relation to the agent framework, for example, involvement in, as you would expect, but involvement in developing, approving, and partaking accidental discovery protocols over, and so on and so forth. So, yes, answer.
Thank you. Okay, now just shooting across the page to paragraph 11, 8.11, and there you referred to the gratitude, you expressed Kiwi Rail's gratitude for having benefited from the ability to hear the evidence that Ngāti Kaupata presented as part of their Waitangi Tribunal claim. Mm-hmm. And you provided an extract of some very powerful evidence. To that effect, and you mentioned that had affected and shaped the possibilities in your view and Kiwi Rail's view in terms of future development of the freight hub. Are you able to elaborate a little bit more on specifically how this deeper understanding of Ngāti Kaupapa's history has led to any changes or potential changes in KiwiRail's approach to the freight hub proposal?
Mm-hmm. Thank you, ma'am. I think what it has done is further deepen the commitment to think not only around partnership opportunities, but actually unlocking economic opportunities. I think that's where that understanding and listening has further deepened KiwiRail's commitment to really try to unlock, prosperity. And that evidence, that excerpt I read from a summary of the some of the evidence that was presented, that has been presented at the hearing, as I said, it's very powerful to talk about how in the mid-1800s, the place and iwi were abuzz, quote-unquote, with the economic opportunities of growth in city-making and city-building, and then everything changed. And so this, I felt very uncomfortable at all where I sit as an immigrant to this place talking about this, but I read that as well. And again, I just keep coming back to economic opportunity, transformation. I could go on and on about this, and I won't. But, this is more than a bit of concrete imprinted with a design. That stuff's important. It's important, and it's great to see developers and others start to think differently about this stuff. But actually, This is next level. This is next level stuff. This isn't just, and again, not at all downplaying the importance of planting and design and design building and all of that. But actually, let's make this a buzz, a buzz with possibilities, economic possibilities. And that, I suppose, is the point of that submission now.
Thank you. I may have just missed your last few sentences there, but I absolutely got the drift. So thank you for that response. Just moving on to paragraph 8.14, and just a quick question there. You've alluded to the email correspondence from Ngāti Tūranga, indicating that they were working with KiwiRail to look for common ground and resolution to issues raised in submissions. I was just wondering whether there's been any further correspondence from Ngāti Tūranga or any of the other iwi for that matter confirming, in their view, the resolution of issues that were raised in their iwi submissions?
Mm-hmm. I might come back to you on that point. I do know the key focus has been in relation to Rangitane, the marae and kōwhata.
Okay. Yes. The next paragraph down, 8.15c, and during the hearing, you refer there to the panel hearing from the iwi, and in this case about the need to see a partnership approach with KiwiRail and an active participation by iwi in the hub project. Oh, and there I noted after one presentation that there seemed to be reasonable optimism. What I'm interested in at this point is ascertaining whether KiwiRail and iwi, and I do get a sense of this, but I just want to hear from you the extent to which KiwiRail and the iwi have moved beyond the point of reasonable optimism to actually achieving agreement on a partnership approach moving forward.
Yes. So in relation to Rangitane,
yes
is the answer.
Okay.
In relation to kōwhata, I think, and again, I don't want to put words into anybody's mouth, but I think, again, my sense is reasonable optimism. I think there is a concern that the proposed condition does not expressly name kaitiaki or reference ahika. Now that's probably been a more late emerging concern that's been heard from Kiwirel, I should say.
Right.
We acknowledge that. But those references have not been proposed to be included by Kiwirel. But I think what I can say is what we have heard and what we do know is, and I suppose this is sort of reasonable optimism leading towards optimism, well, stronger. I don't know how that works on a spectrum, but that there's a commitment for a sort of an alliance with neighboring Iwi. I think that's, we're in that space, which is good.
Mm-hmm. Thank you. In terms of the wording that Ngāti Kaiwhata have requested to appropriately reflect what they consider as their status as kaitiaki of the freight hub site, is Kiwirel considering that, or is there a preference to address this matter in some other way?
Look, I think Kiwirel, again, it gets back to that listening.
Okay.
Right? And so there is not, I'm certainly reading between the lines in your questions as well, because I've also been involved in processes where you might have an applicant or a developer who's, no way, not interested in that sort of language, don't want to go there. That's not the case. That's not the place we're in now. Kiwirel wants to listen and hear and understand that. But speaking frankly, given that there are other, iwi who also we have heard from and who have a role to play here, where we are today, it would not be appropriate for Kiwirel to have proposed those amendments. But that is not to say that that sort of language might not be appropriate. Having said that as well, I feel very confident that with an alliance approach, a partnership approach with Ki Iwi and Kiwirel, those matters will be able to be navigated for this site.
Thank you. That's very helpful. And I think we're just on the home stretch here now. Yes, we've done that one. In relation to paragraph 8.22, you talk there about the amended conditions. And under A there, we've got the addition of in partnership, big tick. And then you've got in accordance with Te Tiriti or Waitangi. Now, I just wanted to clarify, because, of course, the condition refers to the principles of the Treaty of Waitangi, not Te Tiriti itself. And I just wanted to make sure that that was the intent, because, of course, some might say that that the principles are a watered-down version of the treaty.
Yes.
And I just wanted to be absolutely clear what your intent is there in terms of the condition.
Thank you, ma'am. And that proposed addition of principles has actually come from Kōwhata.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you. All right. And I think there might just be one Just one more question in relation to paragraph 8.23, your very last one on cultural matters. And there, of course, you've indicated that KiwiRail's intent is that the Manapiro engagement framework is prepared early, within 12 months after the NOR is confirmed. But I note that that's not reflected in the actual wording of the condition, despite the council having recommended that. And I just wanted to clarify with you whether there was a reason for that or is it an oversight?
Oh boy, you probably picked up the first typo. That's a really good point, ma'am. It's absolutely the intention.
Okay.
And it, we're just checking. Oh, heck. It's absolutely the intention. So I think what will be required there doesn't bode well from the table flip. Should be at the start of the numbers. We'll get into numbers in a minute because it's going to blow our minds because we're looking at two different sets. But I'm looking at the big table here, and I think that would be the thing we'd want to look at. So in the table, it's condition 30. Anyway, we'll get to framing up how we review these conditions in a minute, but it does need a... Thank you, ma'am.
Right.
Absolutely the intention. Anyone else?
Fantastic. Thank you. Quick check. No, those are all my questions. Thank you very much for your indulgence.
Commissioner Sweetman, do you have any questions?
No questions for me. Commissioner Pomare covered mine. Thank you.
No, all right. Thank you. We can carry on.
Thank you. Planning provisions in part two. Just to keep us on the edge of our seats here, section 9, the reply submission set out a response, sir, in relation to your question regarding the degree to which the MPSUD is relevant and how that that assessment ought to be approached as against the MPSFM.
Right.
We set out the Tauranga case there. And have proposed what we consider as the correct approach when considering those two MPS. Now, sir, did you have any particular questions on that?
No.
Thank you.
I think the key word in 171 is relevant.
Yes.
And so relevance is going to be framed by how it touches on the project and the extent to which we have information sufficient to assess aspects of the MPS. So, for example, the effects hierarchy would probably not be relevant because we don't have the process or the information to make that assessment. So it's a sort of, the word relevant provides a sort of fulcrum for that assessment.
Thank you, sir. And then over the next couple pages before we get into conditions, my reply submissions in relation to the part two matters, with particular reference to some of the provisions that counsel for the city council picked out. He observed that there were some issues with in his submission with a handful, but they were not, quote, necessarily fatal. I've set out a summary of my submissions in relation to those key or the sections that Mr. Jessen referenced there. I would acknowledge as well, in getting right back to what seems like probably 20 years ago, in the opening of our case, Commissioner Sweetman's challenge around our fairly cursory reference to maintenance and enhancement of public access to waterways, and acknowledge and accept that was overstated or summarized far too unhelpfully in opening legal submissions. And QRL certainly accepts that public access to stormwater ponds is not a suitable access, substitute for public access to a stream or a lake. But the reality is, of course, here there's currently no public access to waterways through the site. So it's against that environment that Ms. Rimmer's assessment has been made. And her evidence is that walking through those new naturalized areas of indigenous planting will be better than what's there now around those recreational loop tracks, et cetera. But certainly accept that public access to the stormwater pond is not maintenance or enhancement of public access to rivers, for example. And so acknowledge that. We turn now to conditions. Now, I wonder, and I think we're tracking well, just very briefly in terms of some of the high-level approaches to the latest set of conditions you have. I think appropriately and reasonably, there's been an iterative approach to these conditions. It was sort of suggested, I think, by council for the city council that QRL was up to version 5. With respect in my submission, I think that's a sign of an applicant listening carefully to the evidence that has been presented. We did deliberately table a new set of conditions after hearing from submitters, and that was done so thoughtfully to keep conditions iteratively developing, and I maintain that's a really is one of the real benefits of a process like this. And we've been very encouraged by the panel's appetite to have iterative versions of the conditions, and it has really certainly focused the mind and focused QRL experts in particular. Now, in that iterative and now final tabled version for you, what we have also been aware of is, / slightly terrified by, Commissioner Sweetman's drafting, and I say terrified with the absolute greatest respect, and a real reminder as we work through not only the substantive aspects of the conditions, but actually drafting themselves. It was almost a, what would Commissioner Sweetman do here? So that's why I'm terrified about the next phase of my reply as we actually do a page flip. But the approach there has been to, be as specific and certain in outcomes as we can, to simplify our drafting. Also, sir, taking your challenge again feels like many years ago of a must, not a shall. Those important actual, for people who don't play in this space, when I try to tell my husband about how interesting this stuff is, he glazes over. But getting these words simple and clear, it takes forever, but we really have tried to crunch up these conditions. And that they also have a clear resource management purpose. They're not repetitive. They don't repeat what's already in the Act, so on and so forth. Just briefly, page 50, hard limits management plans, clearly a absolute feature of this suite of conditions is management plans. The panel will be familiar with those, and I've set up some summary on that. In my submission, that remains a very important tool in this space, but we've sought to really ensure we're being as clear, and had some very helpful guidance from Ms. Copplestone very early in the process around the when and the why. So that's been very helpful to firm up those management plan conditions. And hard limits as well. There's been, again, it's one of these themes of lack of certainty or what is an NOR, which you're probably now tired of hearing from me and others about. It's a balance, of course, isn't it? In that also, as I'm saying those words, is trite to say, there's a balance to be struck between hard limits and also a level of appropriate flexibility. Not maximum flexibility, but appropriate flexibility, and that's a balance we've sought to take. just very briefly in relation to sequencing, and again, hopefully the flavor of this will come up when we do the page flip of the table, but at a very high level, the proposed conditions would work that within 12 months of the NOR being confirmed, must engage with Manawatu to prepare the framework, must also establish the community liaison forum and appoint a community liaison person. Those things come right up front. Doesn't matter what's going on with the land, how much land, you know, where the project is at, those things need to be framed up and will exist throughout. At least 12 months prior to the first OPW, the road network integration plan must be prepared in consultation with relevant local authorities and road controlling authorities. The landscape and design plan must be submitted with the first OPW. And then prior to construction works commencing, there's the range of construction management plans, which for the most part have to be prepared within at least 6 months prior to construction and submitted with the relevant OPW. And then prior to the first train operating on site, the relevant operational management plans, lighting, dust, noise, vibration, must come on stream. Briefly, in relation to some of the outstanding bucket of council issues that we haven't already traversed today, the remaining issues around road remediation, the city council's infrastructure assets, train operations, and LAPs. In relation to the traffic or road remediation condition, Kiwi Rail's position remains that those conditions are not appropriate. My submissions are set out there. In terms of the immediately adjacent road next network, which construction traffic will be using, Kiwi Rail is already committed to undertaking a range of traffic improvements, of course, at its cost, as well as new sections of road. And all of that will be constructed to City Council standards and will be a significant improvement to what is there now. But beyond that, a condition of the nature in relation to road remediation that the Council seeks to include is, in my submission, uncertain, difficult to enforce. While heavy vehicle traffic associated with construction can be an adverse effect, a condition can only be required where there is a direct causal link to the activity. Construction vehicles will not be the only vehicles using the local roads, and so there's a real challenge there with attributing damage. But probably more importantly, in taking a step back, and I am guided still by Judge Kirkpatrick's decision in North Shore Bulk, there are other tools, a range of other tools at the City Council's disposal to recover costs or to collect revenue in relation to its roading network. Briefly, in relation to the infrastructure assets, Kiwi Rail's proposed conditions in my submission appropriately address effects on that existing council, those existing council assets on the site by, for example, ensuring continuity of existing Three Waters assets. The City Council sought to impose a condition requiring Kiwi Rail to ensure the hub designation does not impede the City Council's planned water bore facility. In my submission, that's an unlawful condition, and Kiwi Rail does not accept the imposition of it. In relation to Power Co., not a City Council asset, but just under that general asset heading, Kiwi Rail has continued to have conversation and discussion with Power Co. We propose some conditions that Kiwi Rail considers address those matters, but I should record that we are still in discussions with Power Co. on them. They are not, Power Co. has not yet agreed to those conditions, but Kiwi Rail considers they are appropriate. Train operations, briefly, you'll see in the table, Kiwi Rail has not proposed inclusion of the conditions the City Council sought in relation to the safety and design process. And then finally, in relation to LAPS, SQ Rail continues to seek 15 years. The City Council continues to seek 5, and some submitters have sought the default lapse period. The very minor legal technical point there, sir, which we've covered your question in relation to whether the panel has a role to make a recommendation on lapse.
Mm-hmm.
In our submission, it does.
Yeah.
I'm going to set up that there. In relation to a 15-year lapse period and why QRL continues to seek it as both appropriate and reasonable, you heard evidence from Mr. Moyle and Mr. Skelton on the complexity of construction of a project of this scale, and it will be designed, let alone built, over years and in stages. And there is also still land acquisition process to be completed, which, while already underway, still has significant time to run. In my submission, though, that what I ascertained the key opposition from the City Council in relation to a 15-year lapse over a 10-year lapse comes down to an argument around certainty or lack thereof for the community. Now, in my submission, that might be a more credible argument if this was, again, a black box, or what I'm calling a black box designation, a sort of square on a piece of paper where folks had no idea what was coming or how to sort of, for railway purposes, 1859-type designation. In fact, the designation before you and the proposed concept plan, et cetera, comes with a well-advanced concept design with carefully considered components. In my submission, there is a high degree of certainty as to what is coming. And so that argument against a 15-year lapse in my submission is less credible in that regard. The length of time is appropriate in my submission to give KiwiRail the time to affect that vision without falling foul of a legal argument around lapse.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Well, you've obviously got the heart of an advocate because I think few of us would endeavour to persuade our significant others that what we do during the day is incredibly interesting. Let's take a break here for 10 minutes and come back and look at the conditions and go through those line by line.
Yes, sir.
And I'll invite the other commissioners if they have any questions at this juncture when I resume. Thank you.
And sir, sorry, just before we break.
Well, yes.
Commissioner Sweetman, were you? No. What I was just going to say, just so we're prepared. In 10, I'm proposing that we're doing the page flip on the Appendix B, the table. Is that right? We have provided as Appendix A the clean set of conditions that QRL seeks. The numbering is different, as you would expect, as we start to get into 59AAA. But I think for the purposes of our page flip, if we can all have the Appendix B table in front of us, I think that might be most helpful.
Okay. Now, any questions before we break for 10 minutes? No. Okay, thank you. We'll come back at 3:45.
Thank you, sir.